There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Man, I took, I did just go to the bathroom.
You did.
From having Brazilian barbecue, it finally came out.
Ugh.
Because it's been sitting inside. And it still spelled like the house specialty, picanha.
All right. Well, welcome to Side Stories, everybody. I am Ben Kissel with Henry Zebrowski. And I want to say on behalf of Marcus Parks and all of us here at the last podcast on the left, happy birthday, Henry. You don't look a day over 34.
34.
Wow.
The sexiest, most important age. Everyone looks to the 34-year-olds and say, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
What's next for our generation? And you know what I say? CBD creams.
I believe that. People are just going to be covered. They are just weed popsicles at this point, the vast majority of folks nowadays.
I smoked a joint last night. It was like, it was called a dragon joint that Eddie gave me for my birthday, and it had shatter in it and hash, and it was
covered
in keef all around the outside of it. Honestly, I'm not even sure what shatter is. I know it's a weed thing. And so I'm smoking it with Jackie, and I was just like, wow, what's the difference with all, does this have all this weed technology in it? It's not even making me any more stone than normal. Cut to me sitting like a chicken on the edge of the couch watching. We watched Southbound last night and we were both scared out of our minds, and I couldn't even feel comfortable enough to fully recline. I was like, oh, that's what shatter is.
Too stoned to relax. That's the worst kind of stoned. So we're going to get to the original Night Stalker's been called. We're going to talk about that in just one second. A little bit later on in this episode, we have an interview with the director of Shy Boys, a fascinating documentary, a fascinating look into the incel community. Her name is Sarah Gardefee, so make sure you stick around and listen to that. Some fascinating stuff. I guess we have the big news of the week, huh, Henry?
People are so excited in a way that makes me feel weird on the inside. How many people happily sending me message being like, did you hear about the Eron's case? And I was like, I know that it's been around. Like, we played the calls that the Eron's made back in the day when one of our first 911 episodes, which he'd be do these heinous calls. And I don't know if I'm giddy about this. Now, for those of you who don't know, the East Area Rapist / original Night Stalker / the Golden State Killer was a sadistic rapist turned murderer who operated from 1976 to 1986, thereabouts. There's also crimes that were attributed to another character named the Vassalia Ransacker that was from 1973 to 1975, all of which now seems to be, through DNA evidence, are tied to a man named Joseph James D'Angelo Jr. And this happened last week. Basically, the day we released our Nexium episode was the day that he was officially caught. And the the line of information that goes, that connects all of these things back to this guy and the way that they caught him now, to me, is the most interesting part of this story.
Absolutely. And of course, again, it is great that he's caught 40 years too late. He is 72 years old. And I will say the news media coverage always aggravates me when it comes to these kind of cases. The first story I heard about was that he was depressed.
Oh,
they say
what?
That the original Night Stalker, he's depressed.
He's
on suicide watch. Do it.
Oh, no.
End your life. Or actually don't. Suffer through a trial and get sentenced and go to prison, because that's exactly where this guy, who was, for all intents and purposes, hiding in plain sight, he belongs, behind bars.
Well, he's definitely 72 years old. Like, you know, some people you want to say, like, your Nanu, you know, when you have your Nanu or your Papu that you know at home, and you
say
84 years young.
Yes. My grandmother just passed away. Yeah, my grandmother just passed away, 89. I would say 89 years young. All she had was a walker. Her brain was about. It was, you know, she knew what was going on. So I say 89 years young.
Yes.
But yes, you're right.
Joseph James D'Angelo had that sort of, like, his face is kind of sinking in because of the rage that he's felt his whole life that's aging him into a fucking skeleton and finally gets to die in jail. But so to go over a little bit about Eron's in the background, so a part of it is, like, you know, when we do a show, when we cover a killer on last podcast, a lot of times it's like, we like to have the whole story. We don't really like unsolved cases, because then where are you at?
Right.
It's just a bunch of scary details, and then there's no arc. There's no ending. So now it's like we're starting to hear a little bit more about this guy's life and how it connects to these crimes, and they do very eerily match up. The one thing about Irons is that when I was there are obviously many sources of information now about there that you can get into. I'm certain there's Michelle McNamara's new book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, obviously was the latest chapter in this saga of Patton Oswalt's wife who has passed, who was also a true crime writer.
Right.
She has been a force that seems to be brought a lot of attention back to this cold case.
Yep.
But there were several other books that were done that I want to read that were written closer to the time when the material first hit the internet.
The amount of information on this guy is quite extensive, so it is fascinating that it took all these years to find him. We also want to, a little bit later on here, after Henry gets those names, talk about how law enforcement found them. And again, I am thrilled that he's caught, but it is interesting to think what kind of world we currently live in. They found him through a distant relative who had signed up for Ancestry.com. I think a lot of folks who do Ancestry or 23andMe don't expect that information to be privy, the government to be privy to that information. So that for me was a little bit of like a, huh, that's kind of a fascinating sort of dystopian type the present that we are living in.
Well, that's kind of halfway Minority Report, right? Because technically we did not know that they would be able to scan this information that we gave, right? And so the idea is that you can go and ping it, and then technically they have to go and find. I like to think our research assistant Rachel gave me a bunch of information on this, and it's like it takes a lot to design a search warrant in order to search for one of these through one of the databases of this type,
right?
But what we're discovering now is that when this popped out, I mean, they say that the newest book, Michelle McNamara's book, had nothing to do with the resurgence in information about this crime, and the research of the trying to break open this cold case. But it seems to be at some point they had a tag looking for this DNA to show up. They've had this DNA sitting there for a while, DNA evidence from these various crime scenes,
right?
From the Irons criminal, and they were waiting for a ping, and it finally fucking happened. There are two books that came out about Irons that you can also read besides just Michelle McNamara's book, and one was called Sudden Terror, and the other one was called Hunting a Psychopath. And there's several. What I like now is because now that the information's been sitting there for fucking 40 years, and the internet has been obsessed with this case for years because of the recorded calls that are super fucking scary. We should actually probably play that, but there's like so much information now aggregated online. There was a really great website called www.coldcase/irons.com.
Okay,
that is I've learned quite a bit about the scale of these crimes. Now he is a very dangerous human being.
Oh, absolutely.
What we are now going to see is that he did up to 50 sexual assaults, and he also closely monitored his own footage. So essentially, he would watch the news reports about his own crimes and then change his crimes accordingly.
Right.
Where they knew at some point, they knew enough that this guy knew enough about law enforcement procedures that he must be a cop, that the Sacramento Police Department had the entire police department DNA scanned. Like they basically had, they did do double check against everything. The escalation is so clear. Like what we talk about with serial killers all the time is that they grow to murder. And when you see the extent of his crimes and how scary they were, and the MOs were all exactly the same. He would put them down on the ground. He would break into their house while they were asleep. He would wake them up from a dead sleep. He would tie their hands around their back. A lot of times he would make them put his very tiny penis in their hands, and he'd be like, play with it, which is fucking disgusting and bad. And he also had a tiny penis. He had a very tiny penis, which then leads to my clue. They say that again and again. He had much, much smaller than average. And I think now I have a theory that tiny penis men are more likely to become serial killers and big dick men are more likely to become cult leaders like Jim Jones and Rasputin.
All right. Well, that's a Henry Zebrowski theory right here on Side Stories. And you know what? Do some research on it. See if it holds true.
They were packing. Rasputin's packing. Jim Jones is packing. They went to lead people. And then the tiny penis people do like small fucking awful shit. And so
I think, is that a chapter in Michelle McNamara's book?
I don't know. I don't know. But so he would do the same thing. It grew to, so it started a sexual assault. He would yell at them, you know, don't move or I'll kill you. And he would do the sexual assault. It then he saw a news report at some point saying, well, he's attacking women alone in their homes, and so it seems to up his own ante, he began to attack couples while they were asleep, and he would tie up the man at gunpoint with the woman at gunpoint, and he'd say, both of you don't need to move, I'm going to take you into the room, I'm going to have sex with you, that's all I want, and I want your money. He'd go, he would put a plate, a stack of dishes on the back of the man, and he's like, if I hear these dishes move, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to kill him and I'm going to kill you. Ooh. He would go commit the sexual assault, and sometimes in the middle of sexual assault, he'd leave and seem to have like a comfort about him where he'd go make food, he'd eat in the kitchen, he'd do all these very, very brutal shit, and eventually all of this led up to which then became known as the original Night Stalker murders in the from 1979 to 1981. So you see a massive, his escalation was huge. He somehow managed to elude the police, which now we're going to find out it's because he was a cop.
Yeah, from 1973 to 1979, two different precincts. From 73 to 76, he was a cop in Exeter. From 76 to 79, he was a cop in Auburn, which I suppose gave him a lot of the insight into police work, obviously, being a cop. And I would assume that's also why he was able to avoid being caught for so long.
Well, he knew what they were doing. He was also promptly fired. Like, he was fired in 1979 for shoplifting a hammer and dog repellent, which is the thing that they said that maybe explains a lot of times why there was a dog at the scene of the crime. Or there was a dog at the scene of the crime and nothing happened, because they would also see several points. It's like when you read through the attacks, especially if you read one of these books or on this cold case website and you go one by one, this shit was scary as fuck, because he would show up and he would stalk his victims for a long time. I don't know how he had time to be a cop, where it's like he would do this, it would play out over a month. He would come in, he'd feed the dog meat. They would go back in the backyard, and there was like cases where they'd find the dog out back with an empty thing of hamburger meat where he's fucking feeding the dogs.
So he's acting like Tim Curry in the beginning of the movie Clue, just throwing steak to the dogs to keep them quiet for a little while, and then channeling his inner Kathleen Turner from Serial Mom and stalking these people over the phone.
Yes, and then he would do follow-up calls, which is where we got the recorded calls from the East Area Rapist, is that he would do these follow-up calls where he'd call and he'd freak them out. He'd call the police and tell them, I'm the East Area Rapist and I'm going to fuck tonight. He was doing this again and again. And so now we're saddled with this, right? Is it
right?
So he's caught and he's in jail. So what does it mean? Like, and will he stay in jail?
Do we want to play a clip from one of these phone calls? I think this would be a good time to hear just the horror and the terror that this man caused in this community. Jeez.
Yes, Razor? Is Razor? Yes, Razor? Is Razor?
Not nice.
All right. And again, that is why I'm not sad that he's depressed.
Yeah, I'm not sad that he's depressed.
What a maniac. And so now, was that a precursor to an attack, those calls? Or was that something that he did afterwards just to continually have these people, these victims, live in fear?
He did it before and after. And that's a part of this. Jeez. This guy's just such a, I mean, obviously, he's a real jerk. Thank you, Norm Macdonald.
Yeah, well, but I think that's cannot be overstated.
But it reminds me of BTK, right? Where technically he is a very, did a very thorough job. You have to be a type of prick that can do it so consistently well that you don't get caught. Like, a part of it's like you have to be so exacting, very military-like. He did it again and again. Apparently, everyone said that Joseph James D'Angelo himself was a real fucking prick, which does not surprise me.
That's like Dennis Rader also.
Same thing, where they said he was a real asshole, but it also fucking shows that you can do all these crimes. So he got married somewhere around 1979. He had his first kid in 81. The crime stopped. And then the second murder happened in 86. Then he had his second daughter in like 87. Right. And then it stopped. It's in a fucked up way. It shows that a serial killer can just stop being a serial killer.
Which is totally fascinating, right? Because usually, I mean, what happened to BTK, and it didn't happen to D'Angelo. Again, he was caught with Ancestry.com. BTK threw himself back into the ring.
Well, he couldn't stand
that
someone was...
He was so upset that no one was talking about it.
Yeah, he couldn't stand anybody taking credit for his fucking super clever murders. This guy is such a prick that at some point that he got it out of his system and then he just let it all go. That's if everything holds.
Crazy.
Because now we're at a point where it's like, we're going to see whether or not this DNA evidence can even hold. And now it's going into, like, is it legal to go and scan a Ancestry website for your DNA?
Right.
They're hiding the identity of the relative that did sign up for the website, because they got to, because basically what they did was it pinged on their DNA.
Right.
Then they went through their family tree to find the dude that was age appropriate. Then they stake the guy out. So just like one of his victims, he's walking around like, God damn, someone keeps taking my garbage cans. You know, because you know when someone's taking his garbage cans, it's just a fucking piece of shit. And you got to fucking get him every time he can. The police are watching him. They wait until he leaves. They have his whole schedule down. They go through his garbage. They find some shit from his garbage. That's how they get the DNA match. Then they do it just like they did with Robert Hansen, where they sat and they just waited for him to come home. And they said his biggest problem is that they when they arrested him, he said, wait, I have a roast in the oven.
What a total maniac. So to that point, Henry was talking about the marriages, and I saw he was engaged to a woman named Bonnie in 1970. Bonnie married a different guy. And there were some articles being like, that's what triggered him. And yes. I just want to really clarify here. Bonnie did not start this.
She did not start
this. All of us have had our heart broken. All of us have been broken up with.
Recent research into Ted Bundy, right? They did the same. They try to do the same thing. Every true crime book tries to make it that Ted Bundy broke up with his fucking girlfriend in college who said that she was too good for him. And that was the impetus from then on that he killed women that looked like his ex-girlfriend because she tried to say that she was too good for him. And that's not why they kill. Ted Bundy was born a fucking monster.
Yeah, that's a very dangerous narrative. That's a very dangerous media narrative also. Just as they do with Columbine. It's like, get it right, folks, because this has real ramifications.
No, the guy was bad, right? Ted Bundy was a bad dude. Everybody that got close to him said the same thing. There's a shallowness to Ted. There's something that's like, when you look in his eyes, it's like a fucking a doll's eyes. He's got nothing going on. He'll just say like, hi, how are you? And you could tell he's been rehearsing in the mirror how to say, hi, how are you?
Right.
Where it's like, this guy, I can pretty much guarantee the same thing. When more information comes out about him, he's not talking, too. That's it. He won't speak to the police about any of his crimes. And once they finally crack his nut, because it really depends on what level his ego is, right? Because some killers, they just love talking like fucking Bumblebutt. Like, he fucking loved talking because it got him the information, because he got to talk to cops. Where it seems like,
I mean, Ed Kemper liked talking so much, he did books on tape, didn't he?
Oh, yes, several books on tape.
Which has got to be so bizarre.
Beautiful voice. I love
this Anne of Green Gables. It's read by Edmund Kemper.
Oh, very good. That? He had a baritone. It was very lovely. He just don't like this. But this fucking guy is going to... probably, it seems like he has contempt for the police.
Sure.
Because you see in the middle of that one call where he says, like, I'm going to fuck again tonight, you fuckers. Where it's just, they also say how he talks. That was the traditional way of the Irons talking. So he talked like this to every single person he talked to. I think probably to disguise his voice.
It's interesting. You mentioned Law. His wife, he ended up marrying in 73. I believe they were divorced in around 82.
No way. She
was actually a lawyer. So he was a cop, she was a lawyer. Meanwhile, it's a sitcom.
If he's not a serial, I mean, technically, this is a Showtime show. What we're talking about, like, if you could get away with some of the sex and some of the violence, it's a very compelling show. But in reality, it's very dangerous. What I don't understand is people's obsession with this story. I mean, besides, it's just so scary. Is that when you read this story, it really just does the thing that, like, if a guy wants to fucking kill you enough, if he really wants to, he'll stake you out for a month and he'll get in that house and he'll kill you. And it's just, like, it's, you could see the, so now I kind of get, I get the giddy expression. Like, I get a bunch of people like,
I think it's a bunch of joy that they got him, you know.
Yes, but it's also going through this story, it's so brutal. Like, every single one of these, it's like, as you read each attack and you go through being like, this guy, you're watching him get bored with himself and then challenge himself and then get bored and then challenge. This guy was a real piece of fucking work. And now I'm mostly just sad that he made it to fucking 72. Like, it's now this thing. Where are we now? Now that we got him, it's like, hopefully we'll learn some more from him. But it's fucking dangerous as shit. You could just, unless you get off on danger, just the idea of it is very fucked up. It's the same thing as BTK.
What an interesting BTK, obviously found through a floppy disk, sort of the DNA of a disk. Obviously, he being caught through his own biological DNA. But then we had a time 40 years ago where he got away with making phone calls that were, it, like, nowadays, you do not have that ability. Like,
no.
I mean, I guess they didn't even have star 69 back in the day where you can call back the number. I mean, talk about where we have come with technology. I don't think that he ever thought he would be caught, and I think he was probably fairly surprised.
Oh, I imagine he was
advancement in tech,
especially at the end. I imagine he was very surprised. I figured that he got a permanent smile on his face from always gotten away with these crimes, but now we got him, which is good. I also say that the technology is probably also the reason why we have a big dip in serial killer activity. Well, unless you look at the Toronto serial killer, which we still haven't even gotten a fucking chance to get to because of how much true crime news has happened in the last 3 weeks, that we can't get to the new Toronto serial killer because each week is a new fucked up headline.
And to that point, we're going to discuss here again with Sarah, the Alec Manasian, the man who did the spree van killing, basically, of 10, injuring multiple other ones. Do you think, I was talking about this, I think with Marcus, what do you think the phenomenon of mass shooting is because you cannot serial kill any longer? It's almost impossible. So now you kind of have to snap and do what Paddock did in Vegas, do what this maniac did in Toronto. It seems that's more common now.
Well, what we have is, I'm going to say it's almost, you know, it's like a dip in patience. Everybody wants everything now, right? So back in the day, a criminal's mentality is like serial killers do what they do a lot of the times for attention, and they're trying to feel important. So what they do is they were killing something as almost a view as an alternative career. Like, you could see that this guy viewed himself, especially the Eron's case, is that he viewed himself as somebody better and bigger and smarter than the rest of humankind. He had a superiority fucking complex because of his tiny fucking dick and balls that didn't work. So they would go, he would do these long-term crimes in order to make a mark in the world because there was nothing else that he could do. So he would kill. So, but the problem is that now with mass shootings, because of our 24-hour news cycle and because of what we're dealing with and because of social media, you get famous instantly. You get the kick that you want instantly. You become a somebody. So what we're really looking at is just sort of the lack of attention span in our criminals, Kessel. Is that they,
I mean,
if we could teach them how to read a book, maybe they'd stop killing.
Well, it's an easier way. I mean, you could go out and you could really hone your musical skills. You can become extremely famous at your art and get on the cover of the Rolling Stone. Or you can be Sharnoff and blow up the Boston Marathon. Or you could be Charles Manson and have a death cult. You could do these other things. The reward, the validation is getting on the cover of these publications. I think our media has handled a lot of these cases completely ass backwards, and they put them on a pedestal as opposed to what we do on our show, try to tear them down to the schmuck level that they are.
Well, this is what he, and I can guarantee this guy got off on the legend of Eron's growing each year, and especially with the internet specific obsession with it. And now that the story is going to be over, I'm interested to see what his reactions are.
Do you think that he has do you think there's any sense of relief? Do you think now he's like, I'll do the epilogue now, and it's going to be a big trial, or do you think he resigns himself and just sort of goes into the cell and shuts up?
If my money is on, he will say nothing. he will go down silently and he will not give anybody any sort of satisfaction. I think that this is a guy that is probably going to be very bitter about being caught. I think that he will sit and not talk about it. I think because we have some of those killers that are they're like that now. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, David Berkowitz, he stopped talking about the crimes, and it's only because he found Jesus Christ. So right. So that's his whole thing. He'll only talk about Jesus. He won't talk about right. the Son of Sam murders. You've got, I'm trying to think of another. It's like, it's kind of like a dictator. He sounds like a deposed dictator. I think that he will sit there and he will not give anybody sort of any sort of satisfaction.
All right.
Which is because like Ted Bundy was like a showman, right? Where Ted Bundy came and he's like, now's my time to shine. He was like, he could go out there and really fucking sell it in the courtroom. Where I think that this guy, I mean, he's a for real deal fucking monster. He was also he was on none of the lists. He was never a suspect. He completely went under the radar. Like, and they now, I just wonder though, but are they going to use the way they caught him as a way to constantly monitor us as well? Like,
yeah, that's the scary part about it. Because no one can say they are not happy that this maniac, this mass murderer, serial assaulter is caught. No one can say they're upset with it, but it is an interesting conversation that we're going to continue to have going forward.
Absolutely. I just wish the jokes were more complex than just how small his dick and balls are. Because the thing is that that's what's hard for us as on last podcast. It's like, now we're taking things a little bit more serious. You got your glasses on, which I think is great. I'm sitting, it's like, we're trying to have more like of an active discussion about these types of cases on Side Stories, but we could see how it's difficult to bridge this over to last podcast because it's hard to create a character of this person because he has bottled himself up so tight. It's so difficult to see on the inside of what this person is. He's become a blank. He's become nothing, which is sort of like the new Joaquin Phoenix. You're never really there, or you're not really here. With the hammer and shit. Where this guy made his whole life was disappearing. Was doing a crime and then disappearing. So now we're going to see what happens that he is being put on blast and see if he changes his story at all.
Well, and we will keep you up to date on this. Well, speaking of folks with issues of masculinity and perhaps genitalia size, we're going to interview Sarah Gardefee. She is the director of Shy Boys, a great documentary. You can find it on Vimeo, and she kind of broke into the incel world and explored their mentality, and obviously in the wake of the Toronto, what I believe, terror attack with that van. This is an important thing to keep an eye on.
And she's still alive. She did so good. Very difficult to do. So we'll be speaking with Sarah now.
Live from your grave.
So today we have someone who directed a documentary on the incel community. Sarah Gardefee is with us. Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And you directed this documentary for your senior thesis, which I'm sure really like freaked out the class, which is awesome. It's a 30-minute doc. It's called Shy Boys, and you were sort of on this incel tip before it was a mainstream conversation.
So it's a little strange for me because I thought of my documentary as more of a playful romp rather than in the context of tragedy.
A playful romp. That's something that not a lot of involuntary celibate people have. I think that's one of the problems. Right.
So when you decided to, first of all, congrats that you lived. I'm so glad that you made it through and that you didn't have to deal with them too bad and you weren't turned into a mannequin of any sort. You weren't like, God knows. But when you went, what made you choose to look into this group?
Well, actually, originally, I think I was on like the IMDb page for 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh, okay. That movie? Yeah, of course. Steve Carell, the classic.
Yeah. So, you know, the forum boards were pretty active on that particular film.
That's interesting. So 40-Year-Old Virgin, for these people, do you think they saw it as like a drama?
Yeah, no, they related pretty hard to it. And then they ended up starting this like offshoot forum called loveshy.com.
Okay.
And then, you know, I got access to that.
So when you first were starting to sort of dig your way through some of these comments that the incel community were espousing, what were some things that you found interesting enough, compelling enough to be like, I am going to make a documentary about these folks?
Well, I guess it was surprising sort of the battling theories on the forum of like why they couldn't get laid. There was like two separate factions. There was like the looks guys versus like the confidence guys, and there's just a lot of debate about it.
So it was people who felt maybe they're physically attractive but they don't have the confidence, and maybe some people who thought they were physically unattractive but were very confident.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Well, shy boys never get a Chad. I mean, shy boys will never beat a Chad at getting a Stacy.
Right.
To use the terminology. And then they have to get, I forget what's the other, it's like a Stacy, and I forget what's the other term for a quote unquote normal woman.
Oh, I'm not sure. I mean, the terminology has changed a lot since I was embedded.
Right.
Yeah, there's an entire website that I go through, which is basically they talk about, have you ever heard the term the manosphere?
Yeah.
What? Okay, so let's get into that. So how did you get a decoder ring in the mail like a Christmas story so you could figure out what the heck these people are talking about when they speak of Chads, speak of Stacys? How did you start realizing the terminology as you sort of went through?
I mean, I spent a year with these people talking on the forums, talking every night on the phone. We would have like long conversations into the night.
Really?
Yeah.
So how did you even get a hold of them in the first place?
I mean, I contacted the guy who runs the Love Shy Forum.
Okay.
Yeah, he went to film school and wanted to be a filmmaker, but was too shy to pick up a camera.
Oh.
So he was very excited that I wanted to make a film about them.
Oh, okay.
Now, when you spoke with them, do you feel that you made any... I think your doc is, I mean, it's very interesting, and you do see at least the main guy you're speaking to seems to open up a little bit more. But did you feel that you had an influence on them, or like there was like anything in there where it's like how were they around you? There was one dude, I'm sorry, because I saw it from the last time we were covering this topic. There was the one guy that was the heavily pockmarked in Shy Boys that was a...
Urban white trash.
Yes. He seemed to be the one that was the had like a... You brought out almost a hostile energy in him.
Oh, yeah. He was posturing a lot. Well, he was into the pickup artist stuff, so...
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Good for the big hat industry, the pickup artist. But that was about it. So at any point did you feel like an understanding when it comes to what... Because my girlfriend, Brooke Rogers, she also wrote an article on it. The more you do a deep dive, I think people... initially maybe want to understand, and then they realize, wow, there is just a lot of very angry rhetoric. Did you ever sort of grasp why their main motivation for kind of going down this road and allowing themselves to normalize this really sexist behavior?
They definitely trapped themselves in sort of an echo chamber, and anything I said, they would just dispute it and sort of bounce off them. I don't think anything sunk in too much. But yeah.
I mean, what would their response be when it was like, this is why we believe this. This is why we believe we're involuntarily celibate. What was their motivation?
A lot of it is they hate themselves and they sort of want to collect reasons why they
want to blame everybody else.
Where they feel this way about themselves.
Yeah. And so
they seem to believe that they're owed something extra. And they also seem to... kind of, I don't know if it would be the term, like how what they do with sex and this idea of this sort of exchange, like it's something that you get, you give and you get, and it's a thing that they don't get and that you guys withhold, and women withhold, and they will not give to men, and they believe that they are owed it, which is a very, it's a very strange thing to come about independently. I wonder if they are taught that, or if it's just the internet has driven them deep inside, especially because if they hate themselves or feel ugly, they then are trying to find a reason for it.
I mean, yeah, that was definitely one of the more dangerous theories that I saw on the forum. There's this guy, his name was Franklin Schmidt, and I don't feel bad about saying his real name, but he was this older guy who kind of led this faction on the forums, and he believed that all American women deserve to be raped. And I ended up interviewing this guy, and I sort of inadvertently ended up alone with him, and he was just like sweaty upper lip the entire time, staring at me, being like, "You deserve to be raped." And he actually got in trouble for kidnapping a woman, a high school student, actually.
Jesus Christ,
man! But yeah, that was definitely more.
So,
dangerous.
How do you gauge rhetoric versus action when this person? Because that is obviously disgusting. When do we, as a society, say the rhetoric is now turned to a point where they're about to become violent cells, like we saw in Toronto with the van attack, Alec Minasian? There were red flags all around. How do we maintain, obviously that was in Canada, so they don't really have a First Amendment the way that we do, but how do we maintain internet freedom, freedom of speech, and also like protecting society from these people who are espousing, again, I think, ISIS level amounts of aggression towards women?
I mean, I'm not sure, because I think the majority of people who identify as incel, I mean, they're, a lot of them are impressionable because they spend a lot of time online and not so much interacting outside socially with people.
It seems like they need to be broken, almost like they're in a cult. They need to be shut
reprogrammed.
Down. Reprogrammed. Yeah.
They need to be like stolen and being like, hey, the total re-education, which is very difficult to do one by one. And I also wonder, because that's the thing about the internet in general, right? And what we do and what we talk about on last podcast and what we talk about it as people is that maybe in a fucked up way, places like on Reddit, there's a new subreddit, right? The incel subreddit was shut down and now it's called Brain Cells, because the idea is they're trying to do enlightened discussions about the incel community. And a part of it is like, I wonder if it is a placebo to get it out of your system. But the problem is to go and say a bunch of hate at a bunch of people and it gets out. But then I also wonder if it, if it supports it when a bunch of people jump on and say, yeah, and get into it.
I mean, I've also seen incel forums kind of police themselves. Like, there was this guy in Croatia. He had been stalking this woman for months. Jeez. And was like, I just bought a gun. I'm going to go shoot her.
Okay, so now we have a situation where, and he actually purchased a gun. He said he was going to purchase a gun. At this point, we have to stop this guy.
Yeah, so everyone reported him. And then he, you know, whatever the Croatian version of the FBI showed up and arrested him. And I mean, he was back on the forum a couple months later, but you know, at least.
Well, I got this. My girlfriend was sent this document from this guy who was an incel, and these were some of his reasons. This is what he proposed. He proposed, one, women no longer are allowed to wear makeup, i.e. falsely advertise their beauty, and hence stop them from banging guys above their league. What is, what are they talking about when they, you know, when they address makeup and all of these things, and when they talk about guys above their league? It's so weird because they almost gauge male beauty as much as they gauge female beauty. And it seems like they're so angry with attractive men.
Yeah, it's weird that they seem to be like so riled up by all these attractive dudes and all the stuff.
Well, Henry, I mean, honestly, they must be livid with you. I mean, Natalie, theoretically, way above your league. Like, you are like the definition of like, how did Henry become a Chad? And how do I look better than Henry. How come I can't find someone who was a model?
I get it all the time. I get hostile messages from men who like will say dumb shit about the fact that Natalie is much hotter than I deserve. And I'm like, well, you gotta be funny.
Do something, or do something with your life that that draws people to you. So what did you get any gauge of that? Like their disdain for also, I don't know, again, men who date out of their league and vice versa?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was Advanced who was angry that, you know, he would accept a 300-pound woman. He said he shoots for bottom of the barrel. I mean, and even he can't get that in his mind. It's like, that's, you know. And
they're then, so crazy.
I will say that, I mean, this isn't always the case, but when Urban White Trash picked me up in a parking lot when we first met, the first thing he blurted out to me, I like, barely opened the car door, and he was like, I just want you to know, I would go prison gay. I would. And I think you should have that information.
Oh,
so that's
my.
First thing we talked about.
Out of the gate. You know, maybe that's what's ruining all the first dates for these people. Just immediately.
What's interesting about this breakdown that Brooke sent you, this guy's, because he also, they're obsessed with points. They're obsessed with like
point scale
levels and shit about how like every person start with a 10 out of 10. And every single time a woman has sex, she loses a number until she's down with a 1 of 10. And you can't be with someone. You can only sleep with someone who has an equal sexual market value card is what they right. call to everybody and all this stuff. And these, because it sounds like video games, not to be completely pedantic, but they're acting as if everything's fucking Halo, including human relationships.
Yeah. What's the insight on that? And how do they have these arbitrary? It's like that show Whose Line Is It Anyway? It just seems like the scoring is totally arbitrary.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to make it into a game that they could possibly figure out how to win, but I haven't heard of that one. The scales I've heard of are the HB1 through HB10.
Okay, HB1 through HB10. What does the HB stand for?
HB stands for hot babe. Oh, so yeah. So you're aiming for an HB10. It doesn't really make sense because I don't know how you would find an HB1. It's kind of counterintuitive, but...
So they just have this whole worldview, this whole mentality that tries to label people based on physical looks and then put them in a scale of 1 to 10. And in their own minds, do they bring that onto themselves? Do they self-identify with a number? Will a guy be like, I'm Tony, I'm a 5? Or it's simply something they project onto others?
From what I understand is they consider themselves to be genetic garbage.
Sounds a good name for an improv group or a band.
It does. Genetic garbage.
We're genetic garbage, and we're here to not play very well.
It's very interesting. When you go through this, I'm looking at this thing on Rational Wiki, the Manosphere Glossary, right? It talks about all of these different terms that I've delved through this before. And one thing that seems to be coming up is the advent of, I mean, obviously we've had blue pill, red pill, but now the concept of a more fatalistic black pill, which is this idea that you take the, if you can give somebody the black pill, it's just showing that literally you are stuck within this world. You will never sleep with anyone ever again. You just face it. Like there's no, you can't educate people. This is the way it is. And we need to, it will all lead to a beta uprising, which is the,
A beta uprising. I hate those terms, by the way. Like all of my being, alpha, beta, it drives me absolutely insane. But that's fascinating that they sort of weaponized the term beta.
Wait, so are these guys who have decided to go voluntary celibate?
That's the voluntary celibate is very interesting too. No, they do that, but some of them will then go all the way to be a vol cell. And the Volcells are a whole other world of even sadder group of dumpier idiots that are. This is the thing is like, again, I know we're talking as if we're supposed to be scared of them. I know that they can do horrible shit and they do horrible shit, but I refuse to be upset at a bunch of people that would be scared. It's like I can unleash Wendy at them. Wendy could go and attack them. Oh,
well, it's a scary dog though. She's little cute. Dogs are the scariest dogs.
I mean, I don't know if it's so much incel. It's sort of incel combined with mental illness that results in.
Well, do you think it's a mental illness just by definition? If you're a part of this group, in my mind, I'm immediately like, you obviously need psychological help.
I think that's a lot of it. Also, I think I think a lot of them are sort of on the spectrum as well and just feel ostracized from society.
When you heard of the van attack in Toronto, how surprised were you once it came out? Because everyone was obviously initially, what's the pigment of this person? We will then identify their religion and then we will clarify if it's terrorism or just someone going rogue. And then again, we have now this sort of new incel phenomenon that the news media was totally behind on. They're like, he doesn't seem to have terroristic ideas. He hasn't made terroristic threats. Hates women. Anyway, let's move on. Were you surprised when you heard, oh, wow, this is a member of a group that I've been researching?
No, I mean, everyone remembers Elliot Rodger, but this has been happening before that. I remember the first time I heard of it was George Sedini, who's this guy who shot up a Curves gym.
Oh, okay.
And he left behind a lot of manifestos and...
So when did that occur?
That was 2008.
2008. So that was, would you say that was the first moment of violence coming from this community?
That's the first one I've heard of. And I do remember a lot of people hailed him as a hero. And they were like, this is the first shot in the Love Shy Revolution. Blood's going to run in the streets.
Well, that was what was so disgusting about the reaction again to the van attack. So many people said he is the victim. He's been demonized. He's been marginalized by society, by women in general.
We saw the same thing.
It's crazy.
With Columbine, we saw the same thing, where if the narrative that came out of Columbine is this idea that it's easier, they have this kind of concept that it's easier to fix the bullying end of this like of his problem is that it's everybody else making him feel isolated, and that's why he's acting like it. Where it's like, no, how do we fix the inherent problem that the internet's showing, which is it's kind of forcing us into a corner with, which is this kind of involuntary loneliness, the no connection. Because I think that I don't think that there's a divide in the fact that the rise of their communities on the internet is leading to violence.
Like, oh,
I think
absolutely.
Being in their echo chambers and not having any sort of outreach to anybody else, like what you did, going and meeting with these guys and trying to hear their side of the story, is something that not a lot of people are willing to do because of how unpleasant these idiots are.
Going back to that with Columbine, the media, and we've talked about this in our Columbine episodes, Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris were the bullies. They were part of a gang, the Trenchcoat Mafia, and the narrative that came out immediately was nerds revenge, shy people's revenge, shy boys revenge. And that narrative still was permeating a little bit when it came to this van attack. And I think we have to totally flip it and realize these people are the bullies. These people are the aggressors. These are the ones who want to do harm to everyone else who is just trying to live their life.
And I will say that after making that documentary, when the people in it saw the documentary themselves, I will say they made a lot of drastic life changes.
So really?
You just kind of have to show them.
They did not like the mirror. They did not like looking at who they were.
Not at all.
Well, that's so perfect. Well, I'm so happy that you made that for that reason. I'm so happy that it changed some lives.
Well, three lives, yeah.
Three lives could save a lot of lives. It just takes one crazy person nowadays.
Do you think that the pickup artist mentality, that the other concept of teaching these guys to get out there and score, do you think that it's actually, do you think it's useful at all or no? Like, these are part, I mean, obviously it's garbage, the pickup community, but the idea of like the concept of going Omega, which is what they call, they start killing people, essentially, is what that term means. And that pickup artists say that's what we do, is that the game can save your life. Is that basically we'll take people that are on the verge of popping off and teach them how to score with the ladies, and then everything's good to go?
No, I think it's more damaging because it just kind of reinforces this idea that sex is something that you can win from a woman, and kind of objectifies women. I think that's more the main problem. It's like putting women on a pedestal and hating them for it.
Just is such a bizarre worldview, and their solutions to their problems are so extreme and so completely insane. You're right. We can't take them. We can't be scared of them, but we do have to take them a little bit seriously.
Sure. We got to keep an eye on them. That's what I'd say. I'm going to keep a little eye on them. And for the most part, I'm going to try not to look at them.
So what can we do now? Because Reddit has shut down their incel, whatever, their / incel site. They seem to be getting pushed further and further and further down the rabbit hole into the dark web. Do you think that that could lead to more acts of violence? Or do you think it's better not to have them so prevalent on the internet, to perhaps normalize what they're talking about and then attract new people? I'm concerned that we're in a situation now where there is a lot of pressure on them. There are a lot of people who I'm sure were dipping their toe in, who are just like, this is not for me any longer. I'm concerned it just gets more and more hardened, and we see more radical cells pop out. And now that we have Elliot Rodger, the curves person that you mentioned, and Manation there, I feel like we have a competition of who can kill the most, who can do the most damage.
I mean, I don't think you're going to get rid of these groups. I mean, it started on like an IMDb page, you know.
It literally started with 40-year-old Virgin.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're going to find places to talk about
and
it.
And I know originally it was a woman in 1993 that started it. Who was an involuntary, who identified, she was a queer woman, and she identified as involuntarily celibate. And then she kind of began it. And then that's when everyone kind of came on. And then she was like, I'm going to dip on out of here. You guys have gone totally crazy.
You've ruined this for me.
You ruined it. As it seems like they ruin a lot of things. So, yeah, I mean, it's just absolutely fascinating. I guess as a society, we do have to keep an eye on it, and we do have to be aware that these groups of people, when we see them talking with such extreme violence, it's the world has changed for them now, and I think they need to be taken at their word. Mm-hmm. You know, so often we hear these people talk, and we just don't even believe them. I think at this point, we got to believe what they're saying. You got to trust people if they're saying crazy things.
Mm-hmm. And if they want to get off the internet, they could always read Telmer Shockley's Love Shy Survival Guide, written in the 1970s.
Ooh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining. Henry, do you have any other questions?
I don't know what we can do about this problem, to be honest. I have no clue what the answer is, because it seems like technically people are allowed to think whatever it is that they want to think, but when it leads to violence, how do you manage it? Like, what do you do to reach out to these people?
Right, and that's the difficult part for law enforcement also. When does it change from rhetoric to actual violence? And, I mean, going back to that story you were talking about with the man who said he was in Croatia, said he was going to kill the woman, bought a gun. It's like, okay, now we're starting to see the steps there in the direction of actually having these horrific ideas come to fruition. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And where can people find the documentary?
You can find it on my Vimeo page.
And where is the Vimeo page?
Well, you can just look up my name, Sarah Gardefee.
Sarah Gardefee. Yes. It's S-A-R-A-G-A-R-D-E-P-H-E. Mm-hmm. And it's called Shy Boys. Check out that documentary. I'm so happy. I didn't realize that they had watched it and changed their lives. So thank you for doing that. That is a massive service to the entire country, to the world as a whole. All right. Well, thank you so much, Sarah Gardefee. Check out her doc.
Thank you.
Live from your grave.
Man, when I wasn't getting any touch at all, I was fine.
Yeah, I think you might have been doing better than ever. I think you were a little bit nicer.
When I wasn't getting touched.
Yeah, just a kind gentleman.
I think you've only ever known me with a girlfriend.
Yeah, that's possible. Although maybe
I'm trying to think at the time, I was just too groovy to be dated.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you had the dashiki on, yeah. It was college, you know.
Yes.
You were out there wheeling and dealing. That's absolutely fascinating, man. These communities, I guess we got to keep an eye on them.
I'm going to keep a tab on them.
It's good that we know them, you know.
Well, the problem is I don't want to get lunch with these people. Like, we're supposed to fix them by going and hanging out and fucking Queer Eye from the Schreikaiden, these guys. Like, I don't think that's who should
be doing
this.
That's an idea.
Yes. Queer Eye for the Schreikaiden. We give them guns.
Incel edition.
Incel, and then we have them go in there. It's like Scared Straight, but with gay men against fat, dumpy little incel dudes, where they go in, they're putting a gun in the face, being like, you're going to learn how to make fucking guacamole using cottage cheese. Like, you're going to do it again and again.
Yeah, I think, yes, that is what we have to do. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, they are the only saviors to stop the incel problem.
I honestly think that Karamo can do anything. Like, he can I'm scared of that fucking man. That handsome guy from Queer Eye, he is going to be president. He sells things to, like, he'll do a thing where someone will say, be like, yeah, that reminds me of, I had a clown in my bedroom. It's like, clown, huh? Sometimes we all feel like a clown. Do you ever feel like maybe you do things just for other people's amusement? You ever try to, like, you know, open up yourself and be proud of yourself? And everyone's like, what? Like, he always switches. And he makes their story his story. He's going to be dictator of America.
It could. Well, I'm all for it. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening to Side Stories. Really appreciate it. You can find us on social media. Henry loves you, Dr. Fantasty, Ben Kissel, Ben Kissel 1, Instagram.
Yeah.
And we got a great episode of the last podcast this week coming out for you, too.
Yeah, it's going to be real fucking nice. Ooh, you're going to like it. Thank you so much for listening to this again. And I just want to say, if you got stories you want us to cover, or you have opinions to fucking express, do it through the last podcast network at gmail.com, because we see those things. I try not to read too many of my @s on Twitter.
Well, you got to be careful for your own mental stability and your own mental health. But
yeah,
so shoot us an email. Let us know what you guys want us to cover, and we'll try to do our best. Again, as Henry said before, there's so much going on, especially in the true crime world. So we'll just try to pick the stories that we find to be most compelling and the most significant for the genre.
We'll serve it to your assholes.
There it is. Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan. Thank you. Do we need a new sign off for us? For this?
I don't think so. We can do a Magustalations. I mean,
hey, here's looking at you. No. Keep on listening. Keep on loving and learning.
You know, I kind of like that one.
Thank you.
Listening, loving, and learning. Triple L.
Triple L.
That's perfect. Talk to you soon.